like I said earlier about the takeover, we just can't compete with City. I know you're saying we can, we can't.
Hello everybody, my name's James, welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents, and I'm delighted to be joined by two correspondents who are about to tell us the best FPL assets to punt for from their teams for 1 week. Isn't that right, Matt? Let me introduce you to our Liverpool correspondent, Dan Lord. How are you, Dan?
Hey James, hey Matt. Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Good man, and I must say congratulations for victory on Sunday, mate. So get the elephant out of the room quickly there. Let me also introduce you to our Southampton correspondent, Matt Samuel. How are you, mate?
Just waiting for Bradley to send me the bleach, to be honest. But yeah, I'm all right.
It's a running theme this year that whoever I get on Correspondent Week seems to be in a state of mental health assistance. I've had many correspondents tell me these have been like counselling sessions this year. So yeah. Let's see how we get on with this one. I should state before we get too deep in this, we are pre-recording this on Monday evening, and we had big breaking news from both football clubs today. Firstly, yourself, Dan. Big speculation is reported by The Athletic that FSG are open to the idea of selling Liverpool Football Club. How do you feel in reflection of that news?
A bit indifferent, really. Obviously, it's just speculation at the moment, and how much of a sale they're willing to do. They're selling share or shareholder positions, aren't they? So, but there was an article I read from the Boston Globe or something. Obviously, they're closer to FSG than probably most. They're saying they're open to a kind of 100% sale. So it might not just be what people are touting as a percentage of the club to be sold. If it is sold, I'm a bit indifferent to different Liverpool fans, where I've said all along, I've been quite happy with FSG and the way they've conducted kind of business. They've not punched above the weight. They've taken us from mediocrity back up to kind of challenging, brought in Klopp. You know, we've had some good runs. We've won the Champions League. We've won the Premier League and got to the finals and been pushing City close all the time. And we've got a new training stadium facilities, which doesn't come free. Extension on the Anfield Road stand and the main stand. So, you know, I think they've done very well compared to what we had with Gillette and Hicks and kind of before that, really. You know, all these people who've been wanting FSG out for ages, I can see why. But at the same time, you know, it's better the devil you know sometimes.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of reasons why Liverpool fans probably want a change. One was obviously big suspicion after the whole Super League fiasco, and obviously lack of spending in the transfer market in comparison to many rivals, where you look at, say, the glaring midfield problems this year following lack of investment in the summer. And I guess there's an argument to say that actually it's not FSG that's brought Liverpool back from mediocrity. It is Jurgen Klopp, right?
Yeah, but they appointed him. They got him through the door. Yep. They chose the right man. And they're businessmen. They're not the same as City or Newcastle. They can't just throw money at it. They'd be stupid to do so. They're in it as a business venture, hence where we're in the position we are today, because they knew exactly what they were doing. You know, they bought that club relatively cheap when they got it, and now they could be selling it for in excess of 4 billion if they sell the whole thing. And, you know, was it 300 million they bought it for?
Is that what they bought it for?
Yeah, 300 million, yeah. They bought. You know what I mean? That's a hefty profit. And it's a more lucrative profit when you've got a brand new training facilities, a bigger stadium that will make it the third biggest in the Premier League. And I think they've seen their arse and also know they can't compete with City and probably Newcastle in years to come with the financial power they have.
We often ask correspondents on this pod, like, what do you want in terms of a new manager? I'm probably going to ask Matt that in a minute. But what do you want from new owners? It's a difficult one. Like, do you have a vision of what kind of owners you'd want to come in? Do you want something that's British? Does it, because of Hicks and Gillette before, that the fan base is very much against perhaps, say, American ownership going forward, do you think?
It's probably likely to go that way, or maybe China or the Middle East. And if it's worth that much and someone's going to invest that much, it's going to be a little toy, a bit like the Abu Dhabi toy in Manchester, I think, for somebody, which is what I ideally don't want. I'd rather have someone who's passionate about the club and homegrown, preferably, but that's probably not going to happen. I'm happy with FSG. You know, regardless of what they can or can't spend or do or don't spend, we're never going to compete unless we have someone who owns a country, basically.
But you have, Dan.
Yes, but that's come to an end, hasn't it? I mean,
had a blip.
Well, it is a blip. The form is a blip, but it can't last forever. You know, before it was City, and all the clubs are growing stronger around us and investing more and more money, and other people will be wanting to buy these clubs. And in order to stay at the top, we're only going to be able to do that if somebody with a lot of money comes in and buys us and wants to do the same as the City owners have done.
Matt, just bring you in as a neutral on this. Where do you see that with respect, someone not challenging for titles?
Yeah.
Where do you see Liverpool in the sense of, do you think they've got to go down the route where they need investment to come in, where they've got to be a certain vehicle that spends similar money to City, for example? Or do you think that part by reputation, being smart in the transfer market, the size of the football club and its history, that it can continue to compete at the top level?
I don't necessarily think it needs the money that, say, Newcastle or City have got. Like, you know, Liverpool have got the reputation. And I guess you've only got to look at Arsenal to an extent. They've been smart in the transfer window. And they're not exactly owned by someone that owns a country, for instance. They've gone about their business over a period of years. They've rebuilt with Arteta. And they now look like genuine challengers. And I guess
that's the last time you get an invite on. Something else, please, mate.
Yeah, you know, it's true, though. But I just think, you know, particularly, I suppose, that midfield of Liverpool, I guess what you've got there is you need a rebuilding job at the end of the day. And that's not going to come quickly, even if you get new owners with, you know, billions behind them. But yeah, I personally think from the outside, Liverpool's reputation stands for a hell of a lot, whereas it takes someone like Newcastle a lot of work behind the scenes to get anywhere near where you guys are.
Yeah, fair. Do you think, Dan, they're looking for a potential quick sell? Have they decided they've got to get out, or because of the recent run and kind of growing calls that it's their fault? Rather than Klopp's,
maybe just testing the water, what happened with Chelsea just recently. And I think ideally they wanted to go down the Super League route. You know, they were one of the instigators. You know, American owners and NFL kind of style leagues. You know, no promotion, no relegation, same teams play each other a couple of times a year. That's what their vision was. That's what they saw as the massive income and how to make it more profitable. But obviously, that didn't go through and met a lot of opposition and will continue to do so. So I just think they might, you know, let's see what's out there. And, you know, whatever they do, they're going to make a massive profit, aren't they?
Yeah, interestingly, obviously, United had a really bad start to the season and it was really noisy around there. You've had a little spell and now it's noisy around you, for example. I think there might be a little bit of that. What's interesting is obviously the value of clubs like yourselves and United now is so monstrous that, I mean, what sort of money do you have to have in your back pocket to even consider buying the football club? I mean, being a billionaire is not enough to buy Southampton anymore, really. To be competitive, you need to be kind of at sort of 5 billion and above. And that's the sort of price it's going to cost you to buy Liverpool. So very limited in terms of the market. I think, yes, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Matt, obviously at time of recording, your manager got dismissed today, which I think is quite sad that Ralph Hasenhüttl's lost his job, to be honest. Yeah. What's your reaction, mate?
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I've been a good advocate for him the last almost 4 years now. He's done a hell of a lot from the club. He came in at a difficult time. He obviously secured Premier League safety, brought a particular style to the club, particularly after the likes of, you know, Pellegrino, Puel, Hughes. You know, we were in disarray at the end of the day, and he came in with a vision and managed to really kind of infuse the players that we had, bring in some talent, grow it, particularly from the youth, and the fans got right behind him. I mean, we had some great days. You know, I was away at the away game at Liverpool, for instance, and that is a memory that will stick for a lifetime. And
League Cup semi?
Yeah. And I'm not a huge fan of anyone, and there aren't many, but I'm not a huge fan of those that are saying, oh, thank God he's gone, because the man's done a lot for us, and we're not exactly the biggest club in the world. I think the time is right, and it's been right for probably a number of months. But that's not to say that I'm not thankful, like, for everything he's done under very difficult circumstances. He did a really good job.
When we last spoke, it was about 5 or 6 weeks ago with yourself, you said it was the first time you'd be very open and ready for change.
Yeah.
Do you reflect on that any differently now?
No. I think perhaps we could have and should have made change earlier. There's been, obviously, clearly stuff's getting leaked from the club. Through the articles that were coming out 2-3 months ago to articles that are coming out today post, you know, is sacking, which I think is a real shame. And clearly things behind the scenes aren't necessarily all singing and dancing, and, you know, players that aren't potentially being given a chance or maybe feeling a little bit unjust and leaking information. There was a Redmond interview in The Athletic, which was, quite insightful, you know, both the highs and the lows of his kind of time with Southampton and particularly with Hasenhüttl. But I don't enjoy reading them because they feel a little bit dirty in terms of the way that they're kind of gunning for him, and I don't think it's right.
Yeah, I mean, The Athletic's obviously got numerous sources, and some of the comments in there probably don't make good reading about...
Nah.
They saw him as a head teacher. Maybe he wasn't even the tactical brains. I mean, the role went to Bayern Munich, and there's a suspicion that it began to unravel from there. But then he was only with Hasenhüttl with you for 6 months, I think.
Yep.
And I saw a remarkable stat. I think he's your longest serving Premier League manager.
Yeah, I think wouldn't surprise me.
That's an incredible statistic that even through the 90s, you kept changing regularly and stuff.
Yep.
Mind you, did you have some near misses then? Every year, when are Southampton going down?
Oh, I know.
Every year you escaped. What do you want now? And we have to caveat that again by reminding the listeners and the viewers that we are pre-recording on Monday night. We are aware that Luton Town have given Southampton permission to speak to manager Nathan Jones following Luton's match with, I think ironically, with Stoke on Tuesday night. And so by the time you hear this, he might be Southampton manager. How are you feeling?
It wouldn't surprise me if he is. I'm a little bit disappointed because... I was having a conversation with a couple of Saints friends, and we were all saying, look, we want a manager to come in that doesn't necessarily have to know the English game, but he has to be good with youth, has to have potentially a pressing and attacking style of play, because I think we've got the players to do it, but he's got to have a vision. And Nathan Jones isn't exactly the manager that I would have gone for. I've done a bit of digging, you know, kind of this evening, and there are styles noted that potentially could suit us. You know, he enjoys playing with a back three. He enjoys the pressing game, but it's the Stoke issue that really bothers me, because we've gone down that route before. You know, the likes of Steve Wigley, for Christ's sake, have come in, you know, been given the opportunity in the Premier League, and it's gone to shit. And that issue really worries me right now, because he has to hit the ground running. We'll come on to the fixtures, but those kind of 7-8 games post the World Cup are effectively going to define our season, because if we haven't got the points we need, then we've got a horrendous run up to what, game week 30, 32, then we've got 4 good fixtures, but by then it could be dead and buried. So I'm a little bit worried that he was given that opportunity at Stoke. And what was it? 6 wins in 38, got on the sack, went back to Luton. He's done a good job there, but I'm just concerned, can he do it with you know, the youth and the talent that we've got? And it's not Luton at the end of the day. There's going to be a lot of pressure from the off. And can he cope with that? Not so sure.
It should be noted that the job he's done twice at Luton Town is remarkable.
Yeah.
Actually. It's the bit in the middle at Stoke. And also, I think, probably correctly, and I can't profess to have seen a great amount of Luton, but concerns about style.
Mm.
And I think, I know you were speaking on our Slack on Monday morning about saying it would probably be a manager we'd never heard of.
Yeah.
In our community, most people will have heard of Nathan Jones. But I think, yeah, a little bit like most people, average fan, wouldn't have heard of Ralph.
No.
When he got appointed. And you think of Rasmus Ankersen being brought in, the model of buying all these young players. It feels to me like the appointment doesn't fit if that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, agreed. It feels like, and there's chat that Rasmus has had a real say in this, and whether he's just, you know, cottoned on to the fact that, this chap's potentially available. You know, he's maybe seen or heard what he can do. And obviously the Luton, the promise at Luton, he's doing incredibly well with them, with the limited budget that they've got and the limited players. He potentially thinks, well, you know, we're not the biggest club in the world. We've got a good amount of youth that we brought in the summer. Can he turn it around? But yeah, I would have really expected us to potentially go into Europe, maybe, you know, the Elitserien Norwegian League or the Dutch League, and kind of tap into some of the talent there rather than, you know, trying to poach Luton Town's manager.
Dan, how do you feel about Saints from the outside? How do you see this?
Yeah, I'm a bit like Matt, really. I don't think Nathan Jones is a good appointment. I think they would have been better going outside of Europe. I feel sorry for Ralph. I think he's a decent manager. And it's hard, isn't it? It's hard in the Premier League. It's hard to get results. It's hard to keep everyone happy. The expectations are so high for every single club. And, you know, if it doesn't go your way, you know, I watched the game at the weekend, and I thought for half an hour Southampton were very good and were well in the game, and potentially could have gone ahead,
yep.
And then suddenly they just shit the bed, didn't they? You know, they lost a couple of goals and that was it. It just went to pot.
Yeah,
and that's all confidence, isn't it, in football? You know, when things aren't going your way and confidence is shot, it can go bad fast.
100%, and it's not Ralph's fault. This is the point that I'm quite keen to stress, and I think a lot of fans are there. He's not solely to blame. Yeah, he's lost his job, but obviously Sport Republic have come in. The biggest failure in the summer was to get a prolific striker, and we've seen time and time again what we're suffering. We've scored 12 goals from 56 shots on target this season, and the amount of chances that we're missing, you've just got to look at Elyounoussi from 3 yards out, end of the first half there, could have put that away. Che's obviously had a couple of chances again. Time and time again, we're not putting them away. And then we're getting hit on the break. And I mean, Newcastle scored from effectively their 4 best chances in the game. And that's not good enough. So the owners are to blame there, and the players, because at the end of the day, they've not stood up. And yeah, we've had injuries, but you can't then, you know, make it 3-1 with a couple of minutes to go, then instantly 60 seconds later, Newcastle have scored a 4th. Just kills the crowd and everybody leaves. We've seen that too often this season.
I reflect, Matt, on the game against Liverpool, which also has been mentioned in that article by Jacob Tanswell from The Athletic, about how the players weren't happy with some of his overreactions. There was the emotional... It almost felt like Saturday against Liverpool would have been kind of a fitting finale if he could have gone to Anfield and got another result after the emotions that night. Was he too emotional?
No, I think the fans enjoyed that. And this is what I'm really not enjoying from the Athletic article, is there are these comments coming out about, you know, it's the emotion on the side of the pitch during the game. It's the waiting post the game for the players who have gone back to the dressing room so he could take the praise. I don't think it's true at all. I mean, you want to see a manager emotional on the touchline. You want to see him kind of back his players. And I mean, Klopp, for Christ's sake, you know, Klopp and Arteta, you've seen it yourself with Conte. If you've got a manager on the touchline that's emotionless and just sits there, they don't get the backing of the crowd, and the fans will never believe in what they're trying to achieve. With Ralph, particularly in the first couple of seasons, we really got behind him and understood what he wanted, because you could see it emotionally on the side of the pitch. Every kick of the game mattered to him.
Did he lose sight of what worked for him, do you think? In terms of, I mean, I've spoke to you offline about it, like being able to predict your team's an absolute nightmare.
Impossible.
And even the system quite a lot recently as well.
Yep.
Did that damage him moving away from, he became 4-2-2-2, became so familiar and synonymous with the way you were playing. Why Big did time. He move away from it so regularly?
It's almost as if he felt the players that he had weren't capable of producing it for 90 minutes. And I think he's commented on that in the past, that, you know, that was a big issue for us conceding late in games, was the energy just wasn't there for the type of pressing football that he wanted to play and that was so successful in the first couple of seasons that we had. And it was almost like he tried to tweak things to adapt to that. And then during, obviously, pre-season, it's the first time we've seen we've really gone to three at the back. That kind of didn't work for the first couple of games this season. Quickly reverted back to the 4-2-2-2. And then suddenly we're back to, you know, 3-5-2. And it just feels like he was trying to always chase a game. And then the other issue would be if something was successful in the second half of the previous game, particularly, say, the Arsenal game, we use exactly the same setup then going away to Palace. And that tactic in the team that he picked wasn't right for that game. But because it worked in the second half, he thought, all right, I've got something here, and he stuck with it. And I think that was definitely to his downfall.
Dan, are we seeing an evolution in Liverpool system? We've obviously, for yourselves, seen 4-3-3, such a regular and a constant for Liverpool. And we've seen lots of slight variations recently. Is something similar happening with Klopp and Liverpool?
I think a lot of it is just to try and plug the gaps, to be honest. It's not really worked. I think he's just tried to make us a little bit more compact. And personally, I don't think the 4-4-2's worked very well. I think the 4-3-3 does suit us better, but not with the personnel we've got. Nunez is no use out on the wing. He's got to be down the middle. And I said it on the last podcast, as good as Elliot had been, it does make it difficult defensively with Elliot in the three. I really do think so. So I don't know. We need bodies back. I think 4-3-3 is still our best formation, but needs must. We were so leaky and so, I don't know, there was gaps behind the midfield, you know, in the pockets all the time, partly just because of poor performances from the players in there. Fabinho particularly has been shocking. People are saying he's had a couple of better games just recently. Better, yes, but still nowhere near the Fabinho we had the last few seasons. At least he's putting tackles in and making a nuisance of himself just recently. Bit like a headless chicken, if I'm honest, but at least it's making a little bit of a difference. I don't know. I think it was more to do with the personnel we had available and just trying to tighten it up a little bit.
Is there one thing that you can pinpoint and think this has been the big problem? Is it a team? Probably as obvious as that, it's a team problem. But is there certain individuals? VVD has been highlighted. Trent, you've mentioned obviously Fabinho. Is there something specifically that has caused all these issues that you've had?
I think what I said last time when I came on, I think there's a lot of mental fatigue there. I think coming so close last year and then coming away with the two shittest trophies you wanted out of the four, if we're honest.
Me and Matt, I'd have one each if you're not bothered, mate, like, honestly.
But you know what I mean? And I think it took a lot out of the players, and it was a little bit like it takes a monumental effort for us to get that far and that close. And then, like I said earlier about the takeover, we just can't compete with City. I know you're saying we can. We can't. We just can't. We're never going to put in back-to-back seasons like we have done. You know, 90-whatever points isn't good enough.
When you say can't, do you mean longer term, as in a 10-year vision?
Or two, or three, or four.
We've seen this Titanic from the last few years, and Matt does raise, as much as it annoys me, a good point about Arsenal and smart transfer business.
Arsenal will slip away.
I fucking hope so, Dan.
Yeah, they've looked very vulnerable in games recently, I think, and then they've turned it around. You know, they played a poor Chelsea side yesterday, and as good as they look going forward, I do think All they need is a couple of injuries. If you look at Liverpool, for example, I don't think we've had the same starting 11 for any Premier League match. I think Arsenal have had the same starting 11 for probably 90% of them. They missed Partey for a few matches and Zinchenko. Other than that, it's been Saka until he got injured with Jesus and Martinelli. It's always pretty much been Odegaard and Xhaka. And the back four, apart from, like I said, the left back, you know, Saliba and Gabriel have played every single game. Why that consistency of having the same personnel makes a massive difference. And although Matt alluded to earlier and said, you know, no, it's no longer a strongest or best 11, you still need a core that you can rely on every week, and then four or five are interchangeable. And Arsenal have had that. And if they continue to, you know, avoid injuries or long-term injuries, then they'll be there or thereabouts. So City will win it. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever.
Canate, is that a big difference?
Yes. Yeah, not necessarily Canate, Matip as well. Just not Gomez, please. especially when Trent's been so bad defensively, and that's his side, you know, the right centre-back. I thought Konate was really good against Tottenham yesterday. I thought Virgil was good as well, to be fair. Fullbacks, I didn't think, were that good, but the centre-halves defended really well. And since I slated Virgil last time I was on, last couple of games, he's been a lot better.
Are the fullbacks playing with a handbrake on?
Trent's obviously affected by everything that's going on. He's in the media all the time. Is he good enough? Is he not good enough? There was a video he posted the other day that he's changed right backs forever, and now he's questioning is he even good enough for Liverpool? You know what I mean? For me, he's still unreal. Yes, he's defending. He's not as good as it should be for a right back, but he can do things with a ball that very few other players in the world can do. And he's affected. He's definitely affected. He's a young lad.
I think it would be fair to say, to be honest, and it does feel a little bit unfair that he does get, I think he gets singled out because exactly what you said. I mean, the one pass he made against us in the first half was ridiculous. It was like nearly pass of the season. He's hit this thing like a shot. It's gone like 70 yards pinpoint. My God. And then you watch the thing, it goes over his head to him. It's saying he's in trouble. Yeah. And I think that's why. I think it's because Trent is so aesthetically pleasing, and probably within our community as well, because he's been such a stunningly, staggeringly brilliant fantasy football asset that we even look at it even more within our own walls, if you will, I think.
Yeah, maybe that takes it away from his defending. But also, when things are going well, nobody picks up on that. When teams don't have the ball to actually attack on us, his defending's not brought into question because we've been poor and he's been under the spotlight. It's just magnified in the media. Every single game they play, it's all about Trent. Oh, did you see him there? Did you see him there? What ball watching, this, that, and the other. He's been in the team for the last 4 or 5 years. He's still only a young lad, and he was thrown in at the deep end, and he's never had this kind of part of his career where people are questioning whether he's good enough. It was always, you know, taking the kind of praise all the time. And actually, he's got to come through this at the other side to make himself a better player, I think.
Yeah, I feel like some of the changes have been part two, part protect him as well. Because obviously...
But Elliot isn't the answer.
What's that?
But Elliot is not the answer to part...
No, he might not be.
Milner there.
He might not be, but then you look at the profile of that midfield three, and I mean, I even referred to it on Monday's podcast. One thing that did strike me in comparison, say, how Newcastle defended a 2-0 lead against us was I did feel they were in control. You felt quite leggy doing it. And I'm not saying you defended badly, by the way, as a whole. But I did think, I just don't expect Liverpool to be like that, I think. It takes a while of mind adjustment when we've watched you for 4 or 5 years just steamrolling over teams and literally just believing every single time you will just get the better and find a way. And I don't mind that you were a bit more, I don't want to say pragmatic because it doesn't feel fair. Let's say you sat on the lead a little bit more at the weekend. And I almost feel like you need to at the moment because obviously the win is so massive psychologically after massive. You'd had a couple of good results and you couldn't even handpick much better than Forest away and Leeds at home. And you can't. If I said to Matt, you're going to take 0 points from those two fixtures, he'd want another new manager, probably, I should imagine.
So, yeah, no, I absolutely agree. That was a massive 3 points. That, for me, was the best performance of the season in regards to kind of coming away with them 3 points, because we really didn't deserve to get all three, I didn't think. But they were resilient, and they showed a different side to Liverpool that we've not seen before.
Yeah, and that's okay, by the way.
Yeah. And that's what pleased me the most, because it's not all unicorns and rainbows and butterflies, is it? You know what I mean? And we've been up against it this season. We've been poor. There's not been a game we've played well.
Matt, that's Liverpool, Newcastle, United and Arsenal. All of them, when they beat us at the time, said beating Tottenham was their best performance of the season. Anyway, moving on. Matt.
It wouldn't take much to have best performance from us this season.
No, there is that. True, mate. You did win a game 9-0, in fairness, mate.
That's
all too common in the Premier League now, James.
Oh, God, sorry, mate. I didn't even think, honestly, mate. You must have been delighted with that, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It was the 10th.
Matt, how do you feel about Liverpool's fullbacks? Partly as much from a fantasy as a real life perspective.
I mean, I'd have them.
Goes about saying. To be honest, Matt, I'd have yours, mate.
Yeah, that's true. No, I have admiration for them both. I think they both play the game completely differently to what you see with most other fullbacks. Like, I have real admiration for Robertson, obviously being a kind of a Scot myself. I've enjoyed kind of seeing how he's developed, come through. You know, it was questionable when he was then signed by Liverpool, but you know, we've seen the kind of player that he's become. And to have Trent on the other side, it's a joy to watch at times when they're really on it. And you're almost fearful, because and we've played games against Liverpool when we've been absolutely dominated, particularly because we've been pushed so high on the wings that you're fearful to even try and press forward. Because as soon as they get beyond you, you're done. And, you know, the link cut between Trent and Salah, for instance, Robertson had a period this season where I think every ball that he put in just seemed to be tapped in. So for me, they're both exceptional players. I get why Trent particularly is questioned, but I also think part of that is the English media. They're not the best at, you know, dealing with their own players, are they, at the end of the day? You don't have the same thing for Robertson. And if Robbo goes through a poor period of form, there isn't the question about his performances. And you definitely don't see it both in the English media and the Scottish media coming down on his performances. He might be dropped from the squad and Tsimikas might come in for a game or two, but it's not a big thing. As soon as Trent's missing, that's it. It's headline news.
Which one have you got in FPL at the moment, Matt?
Neither.
Dan?
What, fullbacks?
Yeah, Trent and Robertson.
Neither.
I took a -4 for Trent 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
no.
So, I mean, I know I'm critical of him, but did I just lose my head there, mate?
A little bit.
But it's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, we're coming to this week. If people are sitting there with 3 million in the bank for whatever reason, surely you consider them for one fixture here, don't you, Dan? If you haven't got three Liverpool.
I don't have any confidence in them, James, to be honest, to keep a clean sheet. So, no, not really. Yeah, can we get attacking returns from them? Possibly. Before, you had that kind of safety of there's a good chance of a clean sheet here, and whatever we get from an attacking return is a bonus. I don't think we have that, you know, definite clean sheet, even against Southampton, who were struggling themselves for goals. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we, you know, conceded one.
Matt, if that's on the table, if you're sitting there with 3 million in the bank, are you thinking, oh, yeah, I'll punt Trent or Robertson for a week? Or are you thinking, I'll get Almiron, bad example, up to an 8 million midfielder or so? What are you thinking?
I'd probably, if I had the money, I'd punt Trent or Robbo, personally. I think you're more likely to get attacking returns against us. Yeah, we could potentially bag a goal, but away at Anfield, I'm really not hopeful. I can see particularly with the change in manager, who knows going to be there at the weekend, whether it's going to be Nathan or whether it's going to be Sellers. I know he's taken interim charge for the midweek game. He could well be there for the Liverpool game. And then they give Nathan the kind of winter break to work with the squad before jumping in on Boxing Day. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's an incredibly comfortable win in a clean sheet for Liverpool.
Would you, for those who were looking to invest in Liverpool assets, Matt, would you say that the change of manager should put them off, or is it just business as usual, do you think, because of the fixture?
I guess the new manager bounce is always a thing, isn't it? And it would be interesting to see how the players come out at the weekend and whether they come out with a point to prove. Say there's a few changes to the squad, which, you know, happens week in, week out with us, but say there's a few players that are potentially given a nod at the weekend. If Ruben's still in charge, then, you know, he throws them in. I'd be really keen to see how they perform and whether there's just that extra 10% that they give. I think Lavia could make a big difference. Obviously, he came in for the last 60 minutes. I think 60 minutes was probably more than what they wanted to give him, but given the injury to Larios with a change in system and Lavia came on, so he could be quite key to potentially stemming some of that Liverpool press, particularly through the middle. If it was, you know, say Diallo in there, I'd be worried, but Lavia seems to be the right place at the right time quite often.
It does seem remarkable that you might have a new manager that's his first game at the weekend and doesn't do another one for over 5 weeks. It does seem very, very bizarre.
I think what could be key is if we beat Wednesday, then we've obviously got the game before the league kicks off again in the next round of the Cup, and not a lot of our players are going. So that could be quite crucial, potentially work with them over the World Cup. And if we've got that game before most other Premier League teams will have one, that could be really, really helpful going into that Brighton fixture.
So, Dan, having taken that -4 for Trent, I think they're doubling down, and I might buy Canate and go double Liverpool defence this week. I'm gonna give you the one word question that I hate the most. Thoughts?
If you're confident Liverpool will keep a clean sheet, I'm confident Konate will start against Southampton, unless some kind of phantom injury comes up. Gomez will play midweek, I would have thought. And I think Trent will as well. Depending on how they play midweek, Tsimikas could come in against Southampton. Depending on how, I think looking at what the formation is and who, you know, the personnel against Derby midweek, if Robertson plays any part in that game and Tsimikas, you know, share the kind of left-back role for a, you know, 60-40 kind of time, Tsimikas could start. So I think it'd be a bit risky to bring Robertson in. As I'm saying it today, obviously after the Derby game, we'll know a lot more, but potentially, because he's done all right as Tsimikas when he's come in, and Robertson did really well. He played really well against Napoli, but I didn't think he was great against you boys.
It would seem bizarre if you played any of that. I'm just assuming you can play four kids against Derby, haven't you? I would have thought. I mean, obviously, this is going to go out after the game, so it's barely worth talking about. But I'd be very surprised if the likes of Robertson played minutes in that game, I'd have thought.
I don't know, because he's still trying to get some confidence in bodies, isn't he?
I hear
you. So,
but then it's tight turnaround, isn't it? Tottenham Sunday, Liverpool, yeah. Southampton Saturday, and then that in the middle.
But it's the personnel we've got as well. So, you know, is he going to play? I mean, he may play Gomez and Phillips and. I mean, who can play right back?
Is Ramsey fit yet?
Well, he came on against Napoli. He looked all right, actually. He's a big lad. I didn't think he was as tall as he was. So, yes, unless he's had a setback since then.
He'll play. It's a good opportunity to get him minutes, you would have thought. Yeah.
And then Tsimikas. But it's the bodies, isn't it? You know, we'll end up playing with Jones, Henderson. Kate has got another injury, apparently. That's something weird going on there. I mean, who? Bacetic, maybe, will come in there. And then, you know, who can we play up from? With no one. Nunes or Firmino or Salah, or at least two of them, are probably going to have to play some part, because...
He played Chamberlain's false nine a little bit towards the last season, didn't
he? Yeah, I mean, he might play right side up top. Who knows? I think there'll be minutes. They'll sub. You know, how many subs are you allowed in the League Cup?
I would have thought it's five as well.
Five as well. I think five will be used.
Okay. Matt, are you bothered about Carabao Cup?
I think it's a good opportunity to get some wins and that some confidence at the end of the day. And I mean, it's we still don't stand a chance, but it's the only trophy that we even stand a chance of getting anywhere near Wembley. So I don't see why we shouldn't. I'll expect changes, but we should comfortably beat Wednesday. It's whether we do, I guess the new manager bounce might help.
That could look good on Thursday morning when this goes out. These seven fixtures after the break,
yeah,
Matt, we spoke about them a lot in pre-season. I'd say as soon as I see the fixtures, oh my God, your fixtures after the unlimited period. Brighton at home. Oh, that doesn't feel quite so easy. Fulham away. That doesn't feel quite so easy. Forest at home, Everton away, Villa at home, Brentford away, Wolves at home. Now, them first two, I mean, probably not as easy on paper as we might have thought in the summer. But as a cluster seven fixtures, it is good.
Yep.
And you mentioned it's going to be a really important period for you.
And you've also probably got the three after that as well. You know, the Chelsea game, then not the best, Leeds, and then Leicester before it turns. I think all the way up until game week 26.
Almost mirrors our fixtures.
Yeah, we have to pick up points.
We've got Villa, Leicester, Brentford, Brighton, Chelsea, Wolves, which is almost what you've just said.
Yeah.
they are very similar, but the difference is, Dan, I'm not trying to convince myself on 4.5 Southampton. Actually, why am I looking at Canate, right? I'm doing it to myself, aren't I?
You are.
Matt, I know it's a while away, but do you think you'll be considering any Saints players when that moment comes for FPL?
Not to start with, no. I just can't see it. There's too much doubt now, obviously, with the new manager coming in. I didn't know who was going to start under Ralph, let alone who's going to start under a new boss. The change in system, again, could affect things as well. If he goes three at the back, you know, you're probably looking at Belakotchuk, Kolettashar and Salisu. It might then unleash, you know, the kind of fullbacks. Will Walker Peters be fit post the World Cup? If he is, that could be good news. Livramento should be back in the turn of the year. I think they're key. But then at the same time, Perreault's been brilliant this season. I think he's probably been our best player. So you're looking at some options there. In terms of going forward, I think the only way you'd jump on a Saints asset is if we sign someone in January that is going to get goals, even if it's on a loan deal similar to the Brozier deal. I don't care right now, as long as we can get someone in. We need to, because scoring goals is a problem. And if we don't, we're not going to stay in this league.
Dan, I've not even got anything I can loan you at the moment. Sorry, mate.
No, no.
Ward-Prowse.
Yeah.
He's not been playing well, has he?
He's not going to the World Cup. No.
But could he end up going by default, do you think? I'll try and get this out before the squad announcement.
I was going to say. I honestly don't think so. I mean, Southgate was at the game at the weekend. I don't think he was there to watch Prowsey. I think the fact that he was left out of, you know, the kind of team that set up for that last friendly, even though he's part of the squad, probably says a lot. And it's not completely down to him. He's had issues this season where, you know, he's effectively played with four different midfielders alongside him, and that's not going to help his game. But he's looked off it. He looks off the pace at times. Some of his passing play isn't what we expect from him. And, you know, what you tend to think with Prowsey for his set pieces, even some of them haven't been great this season. He has regularly been hitting the first man from corners, which has been noticeable. And some of his free kicks, you just straight down the keeper. It's almost like he's playing with a handbrake on. And whether that's because he's felt he's had to deal with the issues both on and off the pitch, obviously with Ralph, and if there have been issues with the squad, he's probably been taking the front of that. Players are likely to be speaking with him before they speak to the manager. So, you know, it's partly down to maybe the pressures that he's having to deal with himself.
Yeah, but he's basically become the only experienced player in the squad near enough, hasn't he? Yeah. Which I think gives some mitigating certainty. So we don't expect for a player who can kind of pop up returns at any time. Only scored one this season. That was on the opening day at Tottenham, and no other attacking returns other than one at Leicester in game week 3, an assist. Mm. That's pretty surprising. And yeah, I bet someone will look at them fixtures, consider Christmas rotation, and think, well, I know James Ward-Prowse is playing 90 minutes every game.
Mr. Consistent.
He's not the worst one to put in there, is he?
No, for that period. Particularly
Interestingly,
for a rotation, 100%. He'll play. There's no doubt that he will start every single one of those games.
If you do look at his attacking returns from previous centuries, 15 last year, 15 the year before that, 9 before that, 7 before that, I'd be surprised if he didn't increase in the second half of the season.
Agreed.
Yeah, I really would. The problem is, like, how do you pick him over someone like Almiron at the moment, for example? And I don't mean for this weekend. I'm talking about those fixtures you've got. I don't see how you can.
Even you look at the likes of Bailey now, you know.
Yeah, it's Somerville, Pereira.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who else has got one goal and one assist this season, James?
Go on, Dan, hit me. Alisson.
Trent.
that's ridiculous. I mean, I'll give him the defence that he's not played every minute of every game, but yeah, it's part of what I said, mate. I think I can't remember putting a cross into the box against us on Sunday. And it's not a criticism when I say that. I just think he's sitting off deeper, make sure he can see the game and stuff. And that right now, in all honesty, if I could go back, I wouldn't have taken that -4, would I? That right now just doesn't make him an asset. Doesn't mean he can't be a good 1 week punt, because you've still got the set pieces, direct free kicks, corners. Rangers is a perfect case, right? He puts one top bin. If that's Premier League rather than Champions League, it's a 15-pointer, right? Mo Salah, Dan. He's got 19 attacking returns in 20 games, and people think he's not playing well. Is that fair or not fair?
Just Liverpool haven't been playing well, have they? So it's hard to get attacking returns or look good in a poor team. He's not been one of the poor ones. I said last time I came on, he's just been kind of on the periphery of the game, but so have most of them. I thought he took his goals very well, both goals against Tottenham. I thought he took them very well. He's still a quality player, no doubt about it. I expect him to score against Southampton.
Captain them?
Who've City and Haaland got?
Brentford at home.
Brentford are poor away, aren't they? I don't know. It depends where you are from a ranking point of view. I'm chasing points, so maybe Salah's the right way to go.
Okay,
if you want to stabilise your position, go with a safe pick with Haaland, isn't it?
Matt, captaincy at the weekend?
It'll be Haaland for me, especially after the issues at the weekend where I got completely ruined by the FPL.
Oh, you and a million other people. Get over it.
Cancelo captain. At least you fucking didn't make the move.
Did you change it and get it through?
Yeah.
That's brilliant, mate. Love it.
I was oblivious to it all. I was out all the morning, came back and everyone's having a meltdown about
just as well.
Best way, mate. Honestly, mate. Yeah, there was people trying to buy Romeo Lavia and all sorts, mate. Honestly. So you'll be Haaland, will you, Matt? What would you think? And I think Dan's probably answered this already, but there'd be a number of people obviously without Haaland at the moment who are probably thinking, crap, shit, I need to take a -4 to get him back in. It's either going to be sell one of Kane, Salah or De Bruyne to probably do it, I'm going to guess. I mean, I mean, people talking about maybe selling Mo for a -4 to get Haaland in as captaincy. That's not right, is it?
No.
For one game?
No.
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 No, I think for the majority, if you haven't got Haaland, you just got to suck it up this week, I think.
Yeah.
And
let's talk that KDB might not feature, you know, might be given a rest, but I think that's a good risk in itself. So
yeah, I mean, not impossible that they might make that decision ahead of the World Cup, know that he'll play every game for Belgium and stuff as well when he presumably. So they might make that decision. It's not impossible. So yeah, maybe De Bruyne, if it looks that way. Oh, that means waiting for the deadline news again. Great.
Good luck.
But yeah, I can't. I mean, it wouldn't run through my thought to sell Mo for a -4.
No chance.
Not with respect, Matt, with a fixture this week as well.
Nope.
Because I think, you know, if someone said to me, I'm going Salah over Haaland, like Dan's saying he might be.
Do it.
Yeah, crack on. I wouldn't have too much against that. Dan, you mentioned obviously your fixtures after the World Cup, not too bad either. But again, individually, you still think, oh, Villa away, it's new manager now, that might be different. So that's going to be what, Unai Emery's second home league game. Leicester at home, look a little bit revitalised now. Brentford away is much more difficult than it is at home. Brighton away is challenging. Chelsea at home, by then, they could be in a good position again. Who knows? Are they good fixtures, bad fixtures? How do you feel about them?
I don't think there's easy fixtures anymore in the Premier League, really. I'd want to get out of them. If I'm looking, what I'm looking at here, I'm looking at 2, 4, 6, 7 fixtures right down to Everton, Villa to Everton. I'd want 5 wins out of them 7. If we want to get in that top 4 and push again, we'll need 5 wins out of them 7. The World Cup couldn't have come at a better time. We need that break. We need to get bodies back and we need to kind of reset and start again. So we won't have a lot of players at the World Cup, I don't think, who will play significant minutes. So we will have relatively fresh legs, I would have thought, on the other side.
Yeah, you've got a few like Salah, obviously, going to...
Well, Salah, all I can think of really is probably Van Dijk and Nunez, who will play probably every minute of every game. Other than that, Trent might not even go.
Trent's going to win the World Cup, mate.
Thiago will be a squad player at best if he goes with Spain. Obviously, like you said, Salah's not going. Robertson's not going. Fabinho will be a squad player. So, I think we'll be quite fresh, or should be, come the other end. Unless Konate gets called up for France, but they're blessed with centre-halves, aren't they? So
yeah, they're not sure. We'll check a few of them birth certificates, see if we can get a few English ones over from them, I think. What are you thinking, assets-wise, Dan, for that period? I know it's a long way off, but kind of my thought process at the moment would be arguably Salah, Konate, maybe even Alisson. Who we always would have written off as an asset in the past, but he's having to make saves every game.
Yeah, Alisson's a good shout. I think he's probably a better shout than Konate, because Konate, if Matip's fit, he won't play every minute. He will rotate them around, I'm pretty sure of that. Konate will definitely play Champions League matches, for example, I think.
And do you think he'll do that again?
Yes, I think so.
Thoughts on the draw, by the way, your old friends?
Yeah, fuck off, Madrid. I saw the draw and it was like, oh, here we go. I'd have taken any of the other teams this team's got. Fucking Madrid again.
To be fair, you had a 75% chance it was going to be bad. I'll tell you what, Benfica are a bloody good side. Bayern, or it was only Porto, was only going to be the only one that was a good draw for you, I think, mate.
I think the fact that it's over 2 legs might give us more of a chance. If we were to play this match kind of next week and in a couple of weeks, we're out. So, you know.
Yeah, listen, you get to February, February and March could be completely different. They might be in bad form. You might be back to your best. So, yeah, you're capable, mate. By the way, you don't think this FSG rumour started off the back of I'm sick of Real Madrid? A few people are saying, I know it's a bad draw, but like, calm down.
No, I think they were just waiting to finish the final part of the stadium and they've got a nice product there to sell on.
Matt, Liverpool assets on Unlimited. Have you had any early thoughts about it?
I've got Salah. I'll be sticking with him. Whether I go for anyone else, I'm not so sure. Maybe Van Dijk, but I've got him in other formats. I don't think I'll be with him for FPL.
Yeah, the only thing that puts me off, I'm not put off Alisson actually, Dan, because I mean, so many times we've sat and it's been, you know, Salah, Robertson, Trent, it's like, don't waste it on Alisson. That feels different now for obvious reasons. But I do feel like there's a number of good, really cheap keepers potentially at that period. And with Konate, you're making a saving of the money. And of course, if he doesn't play, he's not one who's likely to rock on for one pointers and stuff, I don't think. So if you've got the cover, you've got the cover would be...
He's a threat at set pieces as well. He's a unit, isn't he? He's a big lad.
Yeah, I think he might be quite popular, actually.
How much is it?
4.8.
Yeah.
It's decent, mate. I'll be considering him. And I wouldn't rule Nunes out as well, subject to what happens with the World Cup. But we've got this kind of wild card element with Jota and Diaz hopefully be back for you. And that's going to add a different layer to your attack as well. Mm-hmm. Gents, thank you both so much for your time. I wish you the very, very best of luck at the weekend. And Matt, if it is Nathan Jones or if it's someone else, I certainly wish you the very best of luck with that as well. Before we let you go, Let's do predictions. And Matt, no, you can't say 9-0. Dan?
I don't fancy us for many games, but I think we might win this one. 3-1 Liverpool.
Double clean sheet by Blankout and I by Canate by the sounds of it. Cheers. Matt?
2-0 Liverpool.
I was fairly confident that you were going to say a blank there, actually. Yeah, that's going to be a real big feature of January, isn't it? Getting someone in who can score the goals, or even if you know the likes of Elianusi and Armstrong can start chipping in properly, would be helpful as well. I'm going to go 3-0. To be honest, I think for you, Matt, it's all about what happens on the other side.
100%.
And you might find, Dan, with nothing to come afterwards, that they play with a bit of freedom, maybe. Mo Salah ain't going to be thinking about World Cup on Saturday, is he? He's going to be thinking of going for it, isn't he? I wish you both the very best of luck. No Clash of the Correspondents next week as we build up towards the World Cup. But I can confirm we will have 5 Clash of the Correspondent episodes ahead of Game Week 17. They will be Chelsea versus Bournemouth with Gary Mantle and Neil Grover, Crystal Palace versus Fulham with Mctavish and Dara Cohen, Manchester United versus Nottingham Forest with Gary Robinson, Mark Stubbins, Arsenal versus West Ham with Adam Pritchard and Chris Stone, and Leeds versus Manchester City with Andy Martin and Johnny Pringle. All of those will be released prior to the Game Week 17 deadline, which is around about 16 weeks away. So you'll be back 16 weeks away, 6 weeks away. So, getting excited now, aren't I? So you'll be back with me tomorrow to discuss the fallout of Gareth Southgate's shocking England squad announcement. And I don't think it's only going to be shocking because the names that we want in there probably won't be in there. But we'll be discussing that tomorrow. Just leaves me to say thanks again to Dan and to Matt. Cue music, please, man child. The Fantasy Football Show.